Senator Hagan, you sent a letter to Attorney General Holder asking for a review of recent changes to North Carolina's voting law, but polls show North Carolinians favor voter identification, even if they oppose some other measures. Shouldn't the state enact the laws that the majority says they want?
Well, if you really look at the background of the photo ID, the North Carolina Board of Elections has found that voter impersonation that would be prevented by the photo ID has occurred two times in the last 10 years, And I really think that this, that sort of voter fraud in that perspective is just a red herring. And then you look at everything else that was included in this voter suppression bill, reducing early votes, cutting that in half, 2.5 million people in North Carolina early vote. It ends same-day registration. It eliminates pre-registration for high school students so that they'll be registered when they turn 18. Restricts the ability to vote by provisional ballot. And then, obviously, the photo ID. It also takes away the Stand By Your Ad legislation. When I ran for the state Senate in North Carolina five times, every TV commercial I put forward, at the end of it, I said, I'm Kay Hagan, and I stand by this ad. I mean, all of those things put together, I really think it will restrict the ability of minorities, of seniors, of students, of the disabled, and of low-income citizens to actually get to the polls and register and exercise their constitutional right to vote.
And in some ways, many of the people you described are traditional Democratic voters. You're up for what's expected to be a tough re-election campaign in 2014. Is this in some way also an effort to make sure that to protect the vote for you and your re-election bid?
You know, I personally don't think we should be passing laws that make it harder to vote in North Carolina. Over the last 100 years, we've been expanding that right to vote, including African Americans, including women. So making this basic right more difficult when there really has been no problem, no fraud to speak of, that we're definitely heading in the wrong direction. That's why after Governor McCrory signed this bill into law, I did write to our U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, asking him to review these restrictions, to take all appropriate steps to protect our federal civil rights and the fundamental right to vote. Look at the things that have already happened in several counties in North Carolina, in Watauga, at Appalachian State University, where there's they've moved with the precinct, the County Board of Elections moved the precinct out of ASU and put it in a different location for 10, and they've packed 10,000 voters into that one precinct with a facility that has 39 parking places. I mean, I think you look at all of these things combined, and it really will restrict the right for people to exercise that constitutional right.
Let me ask you a little about immigration reform. You support a bill making its way through Congress now. It beefs up border security, and it also provides a pathway to citizenship. You opposed the DREAM Act in 2010. What has changed? What's different in these two bills?
We needed to, in order to get immigration passed, we needed to have a comprehensive immigration bill. That's exactly what this bill is, and it's got strong bipartisan support. It passed the Senate with 68 votes. And, you know, Frank, that's pretty hard to do today. And I supported this bipartisan immigration reform because it's going to fix this broken system so that everybody plays by the same rule. And I've really looked at what it's going to do to our economy. I've met with business owners, farmers, high-tech sector, faith leaders, many others. We will secure our borders. It will boost our economy. It's going to fix the system once again so everybody plays by the same rules. And it will actually, has been projected to reduce our deficits by $160 billion in the first 10 years and close to $700 the following decade. And I think the time is now for this bill. When I look at our university systems in North Carolina, we graduate so many foreign students, especially in fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. And then what do we say to them? You know, thanks for letting us help educate you. Now go home and compete against us.
After the recess, Congress is going to face another budget crisis, I guess an ongoing budget crisis. What items do you think can be eliminated to get a passable, workable budget?
You know, Frank, this is one of the things that is extremely frustrating. I think doing a 12-month extension sometimes, or 3 months, 6 months, businesses don't operate that way. The federal government shouldn't either. We cannot keep jumping from one fiscal crisis to the next. I think that we've got to have a balanced, a bipartisan plan that encourages shared sacrifice. If we're really going to successfully tackle this mounting debt and deficit, we're going to have to work together, Democrats and Republicans.
So in that process of bipartisanship and negotiation, for you, what items will be non-negotiable?
You know, I think we've got to be looking at, we've got to reduce spending across the board. We've got to reform our tax code. We've got to eliminate loopholes to make it fairer and simpler. And at the same time, we cannot neglect the obligation that we owe our seniors. You know, our seniors are on a fixed income, and yet when energy costs go up, food goes up, rent goes up, we've got to be sure that whatever we do does not have a negative impact on our seniors. And we've really got to look at the future. We've got to invest in programs and priorities that strengthen our nation, obviously our military and veterans, our schools. And we've got to help innovate this economy. So, you know, we need to take a broad look at these issues, which is exactly what Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson have done in their fiscal commission report.
Republicans are threatening to attack the Affordable Care Act and hold that hostage, essentially, in these negotiations. How are you going to deal with that? Is the Affordable Care Act negotiable if that becomes the bargaining chip in these talks?
You know, I think there's a handful of Republicans that are calling for that. Richard Burr in North Carolina says that that's definitely not the way to go. And I really think that defunding the Affordable Care Act, if you think about the consequences, something like that would allow insurance companies to deny coverage because of pre-existing conditions. Seniors would in turn have to pay a lot more for their prescription drugs than they do now. Young adults would be forced off of their parents' insurance. There'd be so many things that people really, really like that would suffer if that took place.
Senator, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank. Have a good day.